taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. We try to look back at the original documents, the facts and the details, to find the truth about how to live as free citizens in a free republic, not the slavish serfs and subjects of those in Washington and our state houses. Now, I know, listening to the news today, listening to this program, it seems like things are pretty bleak. Like there's a lot going on that, well, doesn't seem to have much freedom involved. Now, I understand it's easy to get depressed as we see all of these examples of rights and liberties being not just taken from the American people, but in many cases, the American people voluntarily giving them up. So I thought I'd try to find some good news today. What am I talking about? Well, there are examples that are coming to light that we were right, that many of us that questioned what was being said or questioned what was being done actually were right. There was a basis for this. So I want to take some time today and look at some news articles, some events that have been going on that kind of show, while things are looking bleak in America in the near future, it doesn't have to be that way. So I want to start today with an article I found on the website of fee.org. That's the Foundation for Economic Education. And it's written by a Harvard epidemiologist, which points out some interesting facts. He points to a newly published medical study out of Israel, and it found that infection from COVID-19 gives you a much more long-lasting and stronger protection against even the Delta variant than the vaccines do. This is interesting because I was having a conversation with a family member the other day, and we were talking about, you know, what should we do? And I said, well, if we really wanted herd immunity, what we should have done was allow those who are most medically able to deal with the virus. They're the least likely to die. They're the least likely to be hospitalized. Let them get sick. Now, I know in our current society, which is so afraid of any possible negative outcome, the idea of allowing people to get sick seems counterintuitive. But I remember as a child, it was quite common for mothers to take their children who had not had chickenpox to play with a child who had chickenpox specifically to get sick so that they could build up an immunity. Because chickenpox as a child is annoying, but it's not life-threatening. Chickenpox as an adult is life-threatening. So what they found in this Israeli study, apparently, is that if you actually get COVID-19, you have better protection, a more solid, more reliable protection against even the Delta variant than if you get your two shots of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. And again, this is a large study that was done by scientists in Israel. Now, why is this important? Well, if you notice all the talk nowadays about you have to get the vaccine, absolutely ignores natural immunity. It ignores the fact that people who have already had COVID probably have, if not an immunity to the disease, at least assistance with preventing the development of serious symptoms or the need to be hospitalized. In other words, well, exactly what they're telling us the vaccine does. See, according to the study, vaccinated individuals were 27 times more likely to get symptomatic COVID infection than those with a natural immunity. 27 times. Now, I don't know about you, but that tells me that someone who has had the disease and gotten over it is a much better shape, not only to survive it, but I'm assuming, I don't know about this, if this deals with the spread. This deals with the impact of the individual. Now, the point of this article is that, well, then what good is a vaccine passport? See, this idea of having to show your papers, like in New York City and in many places around the world, in order to exercise basic human rights and liberty, well, it's shown to be a farce because a vaccine passport is not a proof of immunity. In fact, this study shows that having been vaccinated, you still can get the disease. So then what is the purpose of the vaccine passport? So some of you may be out there going, well, you know, that's one report, Paul. Well, apparently there are no fewer than 15 academic studies that have found natural immunity offers immense protection against COVID-19. And in fact, CDC's own research shows that vaccinated individuals still get infected with COVID-19. And they carry just as much of the virus in their throat and nasal passages as unvaccinated individuals. This is a discussion I was having with my family member the other day. So if a purpose of a vaccine passport is to keep you safe, well, that's an infringement on your human right, your right to life, liberty, and property, to not be deprived of that without due process of law. Because the government isn't saying that you need to do this to keep it from spreading to others. They're saying you need to do this to keep yourself safe. That's not the role of government. That is a violation of the Constitution. But the fact that vaccinated individuals carry the same viral load as unvaccinated individuals is extremely important. In fact, the CDC director, Walensky, noted that high viral load suggests an increased risk of transmission and raised concerns that, unlike with other variants, vaccinated people infected with Delta can transmit the virus. So the vaccine passport doesn't prove that you're safe. The vaccine passport doesn't prove that you won't transmit it to others. So in short, the vaccine passport is merely an infringement on your rights as a human being simply because they want to promote the vaccine. Vaccine passports are immoral. They are not only a government overreach, they're societal overreach. It's one thing to say, you know, okay, we've got vaccines that will prevent the spread. I saw, you know, one person making a point of a smallpox outbreak where it was traced down to two churches, both of which refused to provide medical treatment. And the person used this as an example of why vaccine mandates are legal, except they missed a very important point. You see, first of all, they went through due process before they deprived the individuals in these churches of their right to not be deprived of their liberty or control of their body. They showed beyond probable cause that these individuals were infecting others because they hadn't taken the vaccine. They went through due process. But that's the other point. The smallpox vaccine has proven to prevent the spread of the vaccine, which the COVID vaccines haven't. And if it doesn't spread if it doesn't prevent the spread of the virus, well, then what's the government interest in depriving you of your liberty? See, a lot of it has to deal with the misinformation, the reasons why people are stopping trusting the CDC and Fauci, because we keep getting changing and misleading information from them. Now, does that mean that I don't think people should get the vaccine? That is completely up to you. If you wish to get the vaccine, if you've done a cost-benefit analysis, if you looked at your medical conditions, you looked at your lifestyle, and you want to get the vaccine, that's fine. I have no problem with that. That does not give you the right to force others to get the vaccine, especially when it is now proven that the vaccines do not stop the transmission of COVID-19. See, the vaccines have nothing to do with the medical science now. It's all politics. It's all covering their backsides and proving that they can control the American people. So take heart, those of you who have been standing firm against the vaccine mandate. I'm not saying they're not still being pushed. I'm not saying they're still being propagated. But at least you have one more piece of evidence to prove that not only are they unjust, they're immoral. And in fact, the very concept of it is absurd. Then there was other report where it was kind of buried in the weeds. Two top vaccine officials from the FDA have resigned. Now, they're actually resigning in October and November, so it's got a while. But what's interesting is part of the reason why they're leaving. See, the two officials said they're leaving in part because they're frustrated that the CDC, their involvement in the vaccine approval process, as well as pressure from the White House to move forward with a booster vaccine, even though it hasn't received FDA approval. Now, this begs the question, why? Again, it's bad enough you've got this overlap of illegal, unconstitutional agencies, but if it's the job of the FDA to approve vaccines, why is the CDC involved? And why is the White House pressuring the FDA to move forward with them? Again, especially in the light of the 15 or more studies showing that the vaccines don't prevent the spread of the disease, and they're not nearly as effective as the natural immunity received from actually contracting the virus and then beating it. Again, this is just more evidence that this is not a medical decision being made. This is a political decision being made. And at least two officials from the FDA use that as part of the reason why they've decided to resign. Political pressure. Now, I understand the desire of a politician to have a good soundbite, a good look, a good view. But are we now making medical decisions based on the political optics? Now, both of these gentlemen believe that the CDC and its Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, well, they've been too involved in the decision. It should be left to the FDA. And I would leave that as primarily a turf war. You know, they're not happy with the fact that their own one of their own directors has not fought harder to keep those decisions within the FDA. To me, that's just a turf war. That's a pissing match. Okay. But what I found most interesting in the report, and this, by the way, came from the Daily Caller, is the deal with the booster shots. See, the Biden administration had previously announced it expected to have booster shots for vaccinated Americans beginning around September 20th, and that it expected most Americans to need a booster shot around 8 months after they get fully vaccinated. Of course, the announcement has been panned by some experts, but even the FDA thus far has only approved booster shots for the immunocompromised. So we have the political arm, the White House, promoting an agenda without the support of its very own Food and Drug Administration, the very agency that's tasked with ensuring both the safety and efficacy of these vaccines, among other things. It seems to me there's a war going on between the White House and the FDA. And again, just one more reason why, just one more example of why, when people don't trust what the CDC says, they've got a reason. And one more example of why it's important that that we the people be aware, that we find out for ourselves, that we, who do you trust? Do you trust Biden? Do you trust the CDC? Do you trust the FDA? Do you trust scientists that say that are showing multiple studies that say it actually getting COVID-19 and surviving it is actually more effective in the future than taking a vaccine. There is hope that we are right. We're not simply out there making these statements with no backing. There's evidence that we're right. More and more reason that we, the American people, should hold our ground and stick to the science, not the scientist. And that's a very important distinction. See, science is based on questions. It's based on uncertainty. It works from hypothesis. I mean, the scientific method is you have a theory, you create a hypothesis. This is how I think it happens. You create a test that tests the hypothesis, you examine the results, and then modify the hypothesis. Yet, what have we done with COVID-19 for the last 18 months? We have seen assertions. We have seen definitive statements. This will have, millions will die if we don't do this. We've seen, you know, the vaccine will stop the spread. We've seen the lockdowns are necessary. The masks are necessary, only to find out later after the testing that that's not true. Now, the side effect of this is twofold. One is it decreases our trust in the people that are making these statements. Now, many people begin to distrust the science itself when it's not actually the science, it's the scientists that are making a fool of themselves. And again, you know, I found an interesting article. This one came out of the Federalist by a gentleman by the name of Dr. Scott Atlas. And he points out several ways in which science itself has destroyed its own credibility with the COVID-19 scaredemic. Now, Dr. Atlas has been under attack almost constantly, partially because he was an advisor to former President Trump, which of course makes him a bete noir for anybody in corporate media, but partially because he's stuck to his guns when it comes to the actual science that he's observed. He's had his material removed from Google. Twitter has taken down his tweets because they didn't go with the current political dogma. But when he looks at this, he brought up some very interesting points in this article. He starts with the letter published in the medical journal The Lancet, which denounced the idea of a lab leak theory. It's called it a conspiracy theory, fear, rumor, prejudice, and even the fact checkers used to censor the lab leak theory for more than a year until it surfaced in the Daily Mail that the president of EcoHealth Alliance orchestrated a group of scientists to write the letter without disclosing their close financial ties with the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Now, you also look at other publications like Nature and Lancet for playing important roles in enabling, encouraging, and enforcing a false narrative. And of course, this has been reinforced by both politicians and pundits who keep advocating to, quote, follow the science, when they're not following the science at all. They're following bureaucrats with, you know, MDs and PhDs. People who have no credibility, when someone like me who can go to the CDC's own website, look at the CDC's own data, and contradict what the CDC is saying by their own data, people stop trusting that. People stop trusting the science when the scientists use it to manipulate information, to simply claim the mantle of, I'm a scientist, I know what this means, you're a peon, shut up and do what you're told. Especially when you find out how often they were wrong. Now, I'm not surprised that scientists get things wrong. Scientists are people. We're all people. We all make mistakes. We all get things wrong. But a good scientist, an honest scientist, leads with, I think, not I know. They say, we believe, not this is true. They're always questioning their assumptions. If you don't question your assumptions, you're not dealing with science. you're dealing with something completely different. Science is based on the assumption of, I don't know, how can I find out? And as I've watched the last 18 months of science eating itself alive by making grandiose statements, and then when they're proven false, simply walking away as if they never said it before. By the way, this has been going on for more than the last 18 months. It's been 50 years that people have been telling us what the climate is going to do. 50 years ago, we were coming into a new ice age, and everybody was going to die. Millions would die because there'd be a new ice age and there'd be no room for us. Then there was millions are going to die because there's no way the planet can produce enough food. Then there were millions will die because we're running out of oil. And all of these have been proven wrong. There was millions will die because the globe is getting hotter and we're all going to drown. New York City is going to be underwater. And these have all proven false. So as much as COVID-19 has accelerated the distrust in scientism, not science itself, but scientism, it's just the latest iteration of placing the opinions of men untested before the facts. Another example has been this push for lockdowns. You know, shutting down medical care, stopping people from seeking emergency treatment, increasing the instances of drug and alcohol abuse, suicide, the psychological damages. This was not a scientific decision. This was a political one. Yet it's just another example when people see the lockdowns, when it went from, you know, 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Let's just spend 2 weeks in lockdown so that we don't overwhelm the hospitals. Most Americans were willing to do that. We didn't have the data we do now. The models, we didn't know how bad the models were originally. So I believe most Americans were willing to do that. They said, okay, we'll curtail ourselves in order to make sure that we don't overwhelm the hospitals because, hey, I might be one of the people that need that hospital. But when the hospitals not only were not overwhelmed, but they were empty, when the hospital ships that were sent to New York and Los Angeles, I believe both of them were never used, we began to wonder, well, if the data is that bad, why do we still listen to them? Yet the lockdowns continued long after the 2 weeks to flatten the curve, long after it was shown that the issue with the hospitals was not an under capacity, but that the hospitals were didn't have enough patients to keep them going. This is, again, why people don't trust them. Now, what's the good news behind that? The good news is, again, those of us who said, wait a second, the data doesn't match the actions. What you're claiming doesn't match reality and are willing to stand up and say no. Well, once again, we've got data showing that we were right. And again, it wasn't just the health concerns which were abused, but these lockdowns have had tremendous damage on the economies of our country. Even the work ethic, mostly the states and local governments shut themselves down, put people out of work, had the gall to declare certain businesses essential, not realizing that that also meant they said everybody else isn't. That all those jobs aren't essential, putting hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people out of work. So what happens? The government comes in, the federal government comes in and says, well, we will pay you not to work. Rather than seeing the folly of trying to shut down an economy for a disease with a 98.6% survival rate, they doubled down and said, no, we'll just print up fake money to give you to help you not work. Never considering the devastating effects, not only to the economy, but to the nation's poor, making them ever more dependent on government, ever more detaching them from the habits and the routines that lead to prosperity. And then as soon as, you know, when we finally got the lockdowns and restrictions pulled back, as soon as there was a disease, as a variant that has proven to be less lethal, if more contagious, we go right back into lockdowns again. How are the American people to trust anyone at this point? How do you trust a scientist? How do you trust a society that provides such bad information, makes such bad decisions on that information, and refuses to recognize their mistake and move forward? See, my issue is less with the fact that people made mistakes. It's the fact that they won't admit it and they won't retract their mistakes. And what we're seeing is the literal creation of two Americas, a two-tiered society, where those who submit to government dictate and take their vaccine, whether it's effective or not, whether it's necessary or not, but just do what they're told and take the jab, well, they get to live their lives. And more, we're seeing people who question, who say, no, I don't need the vaccine, or I have medical reasons why, or religious reasons, or just plain personal reasons why they don't want the vaccine, are now treated as second-class citizens. In New York City, you can't go to a restaurant if you didn't get the vaccine. You can't go to a ball game or a concert. You're a second-class, and you cannot exercise your right to be at liberty in New York City unless you give up your right to your body and take the vaccine. And the American people are standing for it. They're letting it happen. They are segregating themselves into the vaccinated and unvaccinated. See, the sad part is it's not just governments that are doing this. It's people. It's individuals. It's society as a whole. Because yes, in New York City and in San Francisco, you have governments doing this. But more and more, it's not a question of governments. It's a question of businesses, corporations. And how long is it before a corporation that says you can't work here unless you get the vaccine says you can't shop here unless you get the vaccine? Unless you can prove to me that you followed the dictate of government. How long? The good news is there are people that are still pushing back. The sad news is we're not done yet. But the more we find these details, these studies, this evidence that we were right, that masks don't work, the vaccines don't do what they told us they do, they're not as effective as we've been led to believe, and they do not stop the spread of the disease, well, the more justification we have to say, yes, we were right, and we're going to stand and continue to do the right thing. Now, before I head off to break, I want to remind you to head to healthycell.com/outloud. You can get 20% off your very first order on Healthy Cell's new upgraded way of taking vitamins, a travel-ready gel pack, a system designed to absorb into your body, directly into feed your cells better so that you can live a happy, healthier, more productive life. Now, I don't know about you, but very often at the end of the day, I kind of lose that focus, right? You get a little fuzzy-headed, especially when I'm on the road or if I'm doing a lot of speaking engagements. So I'm trying the focus and recall from Healthy Cell. The idea is to give you that focus you need without the caffeine and the sugar that's prevalent in energy drinks and energy shots. Don't get yourself wired. Don't get yourself jittery. Try something different to help you focus. You can find that at healthycell.com/outloud to get 20% off your first order.
You know, Healthy Cell is a terrific lineup of products. They have products that are pill-free, gel-pack vitamins. Looking for better sleep, focus, and energy? Check out Healthy Cell, the leading innovator in nutritional supplements for cell health. Are you tired of being tired? Healthy Cell has a product that helps REM sleep, helps you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM sleep supplement. The only sleep supplement that's designed to support all stages of sleep. And boy, is it needed now during all the stress of the COVID-19 pandemic. So go to healthycell.com and use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any product from Healthy Cell. I use them every day. I believe in them, and you should too. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Today, America stands at the crossroads of history. Our actions will determine the fate of our nation. Well, that journey starts here and starts now. We invite you to join us in making the ultimate difference. Subscribe to our podcast and newsletters. Turn notifications on and stay in the know. You'll find all that back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today I'm trying to find the bright side. I'm trying to find the silver lining in all the doom and despair and general desecration of our rights that seems to be so rampant in our world today. And today I'm going to take a look at a story. I read this the other night, and I had to stop. I had to tell my wife about it. I thought it was great. See, there's this diner in Florida, and they put a sign out front, and I'm going to read the sign to you. The sign says, "If you voted for and continue to support and stand behind the worthless, inept, and corrupt administration currently inhabiting the White House that is complicit in the death of our servicemen and women in Afghanistan, please take your business elsewhere. God bless America and God bless our soldiers." And I just love it. You know, the owner of the DeBerry Diner in DeBerry, Florida, basically saying, listen, they're putting their money where their mouth is. They're saying, if you voted for and you continue to support, and I like the way they worded it, if you voted for and continue to support an administration that's proven itself to be inept. Now, I haven't talked much about the debacle in Afghanistan because, well, it really isn't much of a constitutional issue. I have been following a bit of what's been going on. It is a disaster. It is a nightmare. It sadly does remind me of the abandonment of Saigon. But the point is, here you have somebody saying, listen, if that's what you want, we don't want your business. And I just love the fact of someone that's willing to put their morals before their money, that's willing to stand up for what they believe is right, even if it costs them business. And I think we need to support that work. We need to be involved. We need to look at someone and say, yeah, you know what? Not only do I agree with her sentiment, but because of that, maybe, I don't know, buy lunch, buy breakfast, go there if you agree with that sentiment. It's just as important to support those who are standing up for things we agree with as to not support those who are acting in ways that are contrary to our rights and to our liberties. Now, I do have a group that's trying to get me to Florida. I think we're trying to target November. I don't have a schedule or locations yet. And looking at a map, you know, I think I'm going to be in the Tampa Bay Area, and possibly over on, I want to get over to the Atlantic coast to visit some patriots over there as well. Maybe I'll make a special trip. I'd love to contact the owner of the diner and say, can we do something at your diner about the Constitution while we're there? Or maybe I'll just stop by and buy lunch. You know, whatever we can do, that's what I think is the good news, is that, yes, there are people standing up. And I would hope that not only would they stand up, but that we would stand with them. That when you see the owner of this place, an Angie Ugarte, sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, standing up for what is right, willing to forego cash flow, to forego business in order to do what she thinks is the right thing, well, then we should support her as well. So if you live in the DeBary area, which I guess is north of Orlando, maybe you can swing by. I want to reach out to the owner. I want to reach out to Ms. Ugarte and see if, while I am in Florida, if, like I said, if I can't do an event at her diner, maybe I'll just stop by for lunch. But I think that's the good news, is that there are still Americans that not only have patriotism, but have a sense of honor, a sacred honor that won't allow them to knowingly support those who have shown no honor, who have shown a willingness to turn their back and walk away. And I'm glad to let you know about this. I'm also, you know, hopefully we'll send some business her way. Not because she needs the business, but because she's standing for the right thing. She's standing up for the American servicemen and women, those in the Foreign Service who were treated so badly by this administration in Afghanistan. So that is, it's good news to see someone standing up, and I hope the American people will stand with her and support her while she does this. And speaking of support, people who really need our support, I know most of you are aware that not only did we tuck tail and run in Afghanistan, but because the ineptitude with which the evacuation happened, 13 servicemen lost their lives in Kabul when they were attacked by ISIS, or an ISIS-affiliated group. And I do feel for all the families that were involved. But there was one mother, Ashena Chappell, mother of a Marine, Karim Nakui, who was killed in Kabul. Now, you probably wouldn't be surprised that Ms. Chappell was, well, not real thrilled about the president and the vice president and how this was handled, how the evacuation was handled, the defense, the security around the around the airport. She wasn't happy. And I think we could all understand why she wasn't happy. And she talks about, she said on Facebook, "This is horrifying. Her son gave his life for our country. She can say what she wants, but now we find out her Facebook account was temporarily disabled." Now, apparently it has been brought back up, but it's again the, you know, what's the good news here? Well, the sad news is that we live in a world of censorship. We have become so dependent on third parties for information that we allow them the power to censor us. And I say, and I phrase it that way for a purpose, right? It's we get information where we look for it. If we make ourselves dependent on social media for our news and information, then we are effectively censoring ourselves. But I want to not only express my condolences to this mother. I do not know what it is like to lose a loved one, especially in the military, overseas. Especially in a situation such as I have no idea. I know what it's like to lose a loved one, but not under those circumstances. And I can feel for her and pray for her and express my condolences for her. But think about it this way. How many of you are supporting Facebook, and Instagram when they suspended her accounts for being critical of the president. Now, again, Facebook and Instagram, they're private companies. If they want to be heartless censorship ideologues, well, that's their right. If they want to be sycophantic, progressive mouthpieces that won't allow contradictory information on their platform, well, legally, they're allowed to. But by the same aspect, you're not required to go to Facebook, you're not required to go to Instagram, and you're certainly not required to support them. Now, I got booted off of Facebook, year and a half ago now? I guess it's getting close to a year now. But I had stopped advertising on Facebook long before then because I didn't like where Facebook was going. And again, Instagram is owned by Facebook, so it's not a surprise. I'm actually rather surprised that my Instagram account has never been shut down, but I won't spend money with them. And I'm seriously hoping that Rumble kind of gets its act together so there's a true competitor to YouTube in the entertainment video space. Right now, from what I've seen, Rumble still has some limitations. They don't quite have the content yet. But I'm making a point more and more to say, if I'm going to watch somebody, if they're available on Rumble, I'll watch Rumble rather than YouTube. But I do want to see some more of the ability to use Rumble for more entertainment. Maybe I just don't know and I'm not using it right. But we have to decide what we're going to do. Now, for all those who made a stink about her Facebook and Instagram accounts going down, I thank you. And I hope she thanks you. It's important that we rally to those when we see rights being violated. It's important that we rally to their side. It's just as important that the diner owner who doesn't want people who support the debacle in Afghanistan, or at least support the administration that led to that debacle, well, it's also just as important that we not support the platforms that want to infringe on our free speech. I'm not saying they don't have a legal right to do so, but we also have a moral right to decide, will we support them? Will we help them make money? This, to me, is another situation where can we rally to the injured? Not simply because of the loss of life, which there's no way to replace that, but to rally to her to make sure that she has a platform, even if Facebook and YouTube and whatnot decide they don't want to carry her anymore. Now, I believe the silver lining is, yes, she got her account back, and the silver lining is, I hope there are people that will help spread her word, even if Facebook won't. And that's probably the thing I think we can do the most. You see, the big thing with Facebook and YouTube and Twitter is, well, they're the 800-pound gorilla. They have the most organic members. They have the most, you can get your content before more people on those platforms organically. In other words, you don't have to have other people help you. It's just there. But doesn't that mean that maybe we need to spend a little more time sharing this content around our own circles? If we don't want to be dependent on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter, well, then we need to find a way to do this ourselves. Maybe this is a modern version of the Committees of Correspondence, where patriots once again look to share vital information, even if the official means are not available to them. I don't know. Maybe it's something we need to think a bit more about. How do we do this so that when people get censored or specific messages get censored, we find other ways of sharing them. If you've got ideas, I'd love to hear them. You know, I part of the reason why I set up Constitution Scholars was so that we would have a place where freedom of speech, as long as it's not vulgar, as it's not threatening, as it's not illegal, is allowed. where we can disagree and debate on topics of well, I've tried to focus on the Constitution, but where we can have these debates, where we can look at other sides and other points of view. Now, sure, I'd love the Constitution Scholars to become the constitutional Facebook, but I'm not expecting that to happen. But maybe there's a way we can find to share this information with friends and relatives, even if the gatekeepers at Facebook and YouTube and Twitter, well, if they think that it shouldn't be allowed. So the silver lining is there are still possibilities. We don't have to be dependent on these high-tech giants, that we were able to survive before them and we'll be able to survive after them, that what we really need to do is find ways to make sure that we are independent from them. So let's take another look at some other areas that maybe there's a little bit of good news. Let's take a look at some of the election stuff. So there's a group called Black Voters Matter, and they filed a case claiming that postage is an example of a poll tax in the state of Georgia. Yeah, I find it, not only do I find it laughable, but apparently the court found it laughable as well. A three-judge panel dismissed this as a frivolous case, but it's just another example of what's sometimes referred to as process being punishment. If we just continue to beat and batter people with these frivolous lawsuits, then eventually, I mean, how many times do you have to defend yourself against the same frivolous charge over and over and over again? It's not like these things have no cost. You know, you still have to put up a defense. You still have to pay attorney's fees. You still have filing costs and other costs to deal with these. But just think about this for a minute. The very idea that if you decide, rather than voting in person or using a drop box, you decide to drop your ballot in the mail, postage becomes a poll tax? I mean, it is absurd on its face. But this made its way through some court to finally get to the point of saying, yeah, no, this is ridiculous. This is foolish. But to me, the important point is not simply that the good news is a court relatively quickly dismissed this. The bad news is it's just another example of, intimidation by lawsuit. We see it in the gun industry coming back now. You know, we're seeing it in the election questions. And again, not just this one. Think of all the election lawsuits, the lawsuits against state laws that are trying to minimize voter fraud, minimize the opportunities for malfeasance or misfeasance in voting. Yet we get beat up with the lawsuits, and those lawsuits have costs. Because remember, it's not simply that this group filed a suit. That suit had to be defended, and the people of Georgia had to spend money in the form of paying lawyers and court fees and other things in order to defend themselves from what is obviously a frivolous lawsuit. And I'm not saying people shouldn't be allowed to file lawsuits, but I am more and more in favor of this idea of loser pays. If you're going to file a lawsuit and you lose, you should have to pay something to compensate the other party. On the other hand, if you sue somebody and you win, well, then your legal fees are often covered as part of the settlement. The question really comes down to, if there is no cost for filing a lawsuit, that no real cost, what's to stop people from using them as a bully's tool rather than their proper purpose, and that is a way to petition the government for a redress of grievance. But there's more going on in the Georgia election. And remember, the Georgia election had a significant influence, especially when you consider the other states whose electors, presidential electors, were illegally appointed. Now we're finding in DeKalb County, Georgia, that 70% of the absentee ballots that were placed in drop boxes were counted and certified by officials, even though they violated the chain of custody requirements. That's right, almost 44,000 ballots, according to Georgia State News, were counted even though they did not have the required chain of custody documentation required, by the way, by law. See, when when ballots are placed in the drop box, Georgia law requires that they be immediately transported to the county registrar by a two-person collection team. The team is required to sign a ballot transfer form indicating the number of ballots picked up, the time the ballots were picked up, and the location of the drop box. Now, the law also states that the county registrar or their designee shall sign for the ballot transfer forms upon receipt of the ballot from the collection teams. Yet, according to Georgia Star News, in a open records request, they looked at the 725 absentee ballot drop box transfer forms used in the election to document the chain of evidence for 61,731 absentee ballots. And in checking that, they found, again, 70% of them did not meet the chain of custody requirements. Now, why is that important? I've talked before about chain of custody. One of the reasons why I vote in person is to maintain the chain of custody. I show up to vote. I show them my ID. I'm handed a ballot. That ballot remains in my custody until the vote is cast and counted. And I don't have to worry about somebody else playing games, which is one of the concerns with the drop box. So they put in, Georgia put in laws to protect against this, and apparently these laws were violated. Well, that really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Laws are violated all the time, but it's another example of the problems with the elections. How do you trust elections when the people who are running the elections show themselves to be untrustworthy? So while the bad news is, there were more problems in the Georgia election than we may have first realized, the good news is, for all of us who have pointed out the issues, pointed out the problems, pointed out the vulnerabilities of voting absentee, we have more examples right here in the state of Georgia. Now, the question is, really, citizens of Georgia, what will you do about it? Will you require an investigation? Will you prosecute those who fail to follow the law when handling ballots? Or will you succumb to the same old, it wasn't enough to actually affect the election, so let's not bother doing anything about it, to that same nonsense and rhetoric? That's really up to the people of the state of Georgia, the citizens of the state of Georgia. But I want to warn you, if you continue to have problems with your election, sooner or later, the other states will stop trusting your elections. You see, we are a union of 50 states. That doesn't mean that when a state misbehaves, the other states have no recourse. That's part of the concept of a union, a federalist union, a republic, the way we've structured it, is that the states are accountable to each other. So it really should be an embarrassment to the government and the people of the state of Georgia, and I would hope they will do something about it. But more importantly, I hope the other states look at this and maybe they think twice about simply blindly accepting what a state says especially when it has a history of, let's just say, not doing things according to their own rules. But the thing I wanted to remind us today, the thing that I was trying to do today, is not focus solely on the doom and gloom. It is not all bad news. We still live in probably the greatest country in the world. We're not as free as we used to be, and according to many reports, we're not as free as other countries. But You know, there are still millions of people fighting to get here and not millions of people fighting to get out. I think every so often we need to stop and get some perspective. Yes, there are problems, and yes, we need to work on them. We don't want to ignore them. Ignoring our problems is how we've gotten here. But neither should we ignore the good news either. If you focus on the bad news to the detriment of the good news, you get discouraged and you begin to wonder why. So let's take some of these examples, whether it's the people that are standing up for what is right, whether it, you know, they be government workers who resign rather than succumb to political pressure, or diner owners that are willing to put their money where their mouth is, whether it's people standing up when Facebook and others try to shut them up because they don't want people to hear what needs to be said, or whether it's those who are investigating and auditing our elections, making sure that we all know when things go wrong as well as when things go right. There's a lot to be worried about in this country, and I won't pretend there isn't. But that doesn't mean we can't take some time every once in a while, remember the good things, remember why we talk about this being the greatest country in the world, and use that as a reason to energize ourselves, to invigorate ourselves to work that much harder to restore freedom and liberty and rights and justice and the rule of law to this country. This country was built on those things. It's important that we restore the foundations if we wish to continue to be a free people. If we want to be the land of the free, we must be the home of the brave. We must look at our warts, but we also need to be reminded of the good things every so often. So I hope you enjoyed this little bit of news, this little bit of looking for the silver lining where we could find it. I hope you'll join me in doing that as well. As you look through the news, as you look through the reports that are coming in, see where you can find some good news, something you can promote, something you can get behind, and then do it. And please, share it with others, whether you're sharing information on the Constitution Study or you join up with the Constitution Scholars and share with others there. That's what the Constitution Scholars is there for us to read and study and share information so that we can all live a freer, happier life in this country. Now be sure to make AmericaOutLoud.com your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. It's important that we all do our part to share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, and the videos, good, bad, and ugly, so that we can help secure America's future.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.